Well, hello, and welcome to part one of the three-part NIMBY and the D-Hoppers podcast. I'm Cory Doctorow, and I'll be reading to you this story. The story is originally published in Asimov Science Fiction Magazine and subsequently reprinted in French and Russian and Chinese. It's pretty cool, and one of the year's best anthologies as well. This story came to me in a dream. It's the only one I've written that came to me that way, but I literally woke up one morning having had this entire story in a dream and wrote it over the course of a couple of days that followed. I've just gotten back from California. As you can probably hear, I got a bit of a cold that was noted exacerbated by a hard night on an airplane. I was at the Emerging Technologies Conference that O'Reilly puts on in San Diego every year, and that I'm a jurist for. We had a really excellent time. It was amazing to see some of those proposals that I'd seen on paper come to life as their proposers delivered them. Really wonderful conference and great talks and conversation. And I got to spend the weekend in Disneyland and even got to visit Club 33, the secret members club over Pirates of the Caribbean that Walt built for the 33 investors that didn't pull out when he was building Disneyland. I had to get a friend of a friend of a friend to get me into it, but gosh, was it ever worth it? One quick reminder before we go to the story. This Sunday, the 19th of March, is the London Copy Fighters Drunken Brunch and Talking Shop, an event where people come over to my office in London, which is across the street from Speaker's Corner, and have a boozy champagne process wine brunch. And once we're all a little lubricated, walk across the street to Speaker's Corner and give impromptu talks about copyright and related issues near the Godbothers and Marxists and militant Muslims and so on. I hope you can come if you're in London. And now, without further ado, on to part one of NIMBY and the D-Hoppers. I hope you enjoy it. Bye. NIMBY and the Dimension Hoppers by Cory Doctorow. Originally published in Asimov Science Fiction Magazine, June 2003. Don't get me wrong. I like unspoiled wilderness. I like my sky clear and blue and my city free of the thunder of cars and jackhammers. I'm no technocrat. But goddammit, who wouldn't want a fully automatic, laser-guided, armor-piercing, self-replenishing personal sidearm? Nice turn of phrase, huh? I finally memorized it one night from one of the hoppers as he stood in my bedroom, pointing his hand cannon at another hopper, enumerating its many charms. This is a laser-guided blah blah blah. Throw down your arms and lace your fingers behind your head, blah blah blah. I'd heard the same dialogue nearly every day that month, whenever the dimension hoppers catapulted into my home, shot it up, smashed my window, dived into the street, and chased one another through my poor little shtetl, wreaking havoc, maiming bystanders, and then gating out to another poor dimension to carry on there. Assholes. It was all I could do to keep my house well-fed on sand to replace its windows. Much more hopper invasion, and I was going to have to extrude its legs and Baba Yaga to the beach. Why the hell was it always my house, anyway? I wasn't going to get back to sleep, that much was sure. The autumn wind blowing through the shattered window was fragrant with maple and rich decay and crisp hay, but it was also cold enough to steam my breath and turn me out in all-over goose flesh. Besides, the racket they were making out in the plaza was deafening, all supersonic thunderclaps and screams from wounded houses. The house husbands would have their work cut out for them come morning. So I found a robe and slippers and stumbled down to the kitchen, got some coffee from one of the nipples and milk from another, waited for the noise to recede into the bicycle fields, and went outside and knocked on Sally's door. Her bedroom window flew open, and she hung her head out. "Barry?" she called. "Yeah," I called back up, clouds of condensed breath obscuring her sleep-gummed face. "Let me in, I'm freezing to death." The window closed, and a moment later the door swung open. Sally had wrapped a heavy duvet around her broad shoulders like a shawl, and underneath she wore a loose robe that hung to her long, bare toes. Sally and I had a thing once. It was serious enough that we attached our houses and joined the beds. She curled her toes when I tickled her. We're still friends. Hell, our houses are still next door to one another. But I haven't curled her toes in a couple years. "Jesus, it can't be 3 a.m, can it?" she said as I slipped past her and into the warmth of the house. "It can and is. Transdimensional crime fighters hew to no human schedule." I collapsed onto her sofa and tucked my feet under my haunches. "I have had more than enough of this crap," I said, massaging my temples. Sally sank down next to me and threw her comforter over my lap, then gave my shoulder a squeeze.
It's taking a toll on all of us. The Jeffersons are going to relocate. They've been writing to their cousins in Niagara Falls, and they say there's hardly any Hoppers down there. But how long is that going to last, I wonder? Oh, I don't know. The Hoppers could go away tomorrow. We didn't know that they're going to be here forever. Of course I know it. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. They've got D-Hoppers now. They're not going to just stop using them. I didn't say anything, but I did stare pointedly at the abstract mosaic covering her parlor wall, closely fitted of scrap pieces of scrap aluminum, plastics too abstruse to feed even to the crudest house, rare beach glass, and bunched vinyl, relics of the technocratic age. "That's different," she said. "We ditched technocracy because we found something that worked better. No one decided it was too dangerous and had to be set aside for our own good. It just got, you know, obsolete. Nothing's going to make the D-Hoppers obsolete for those guys." Out in the plaza, the booms continued, punctuated by the peristaltic noises of houses hurrying away. Sally's house gave a shudder in sympathy, and the mosaic rippled. I held my cup away from the comforter as coffee sloshed over the edge into the floor, where the house drank it greedily. "No caffeine," Sally said as she sopped up the coffee with her stockinged foot. "The house gets all jumpy." I opened my mouth to say something about Sally's crackpot house husbandry theories, and then the door was blown off its hinges. A Hopper in outlandish technocrat armor rolled into the parlor, sat up, snapped off 3 rounds in the general direction of the door, one passed through it, the other two left curdled house flesh and scorch marks on the wall around it. Sally and I levitated out of our seats and dived behind the sofa as another Hopper rolled through the door and returned fire, missing his opponent but blowing away the mosaic. My heart hammered in my chest and all my other cliches hackneyed in my chestnuts. "You okay?" I hollered over the din. "I think so," Sally said. A piece of jagged plastic was embedded in the wall, centimeters over her head, and the house was keening. A stray blast of electric thunder set the sofa ablaze, and we scrambled away. The second gunman was retreating under a volley of fire from the first, who was performing machine-assisted gymnastics around the parlor, avoiding the shots aimed at him. The second man made good his escape, and the first holstered his weapon and turned to face us. "Sorry about the mess, folks," he said through his faceplate. I was speechless. Sally, though, cupped her ear and hollered, "What?" "Sorry," the gunman said again. "What?" Sally said. She turned and said, "Can you make out what he's saying?" She winked at me with the eye that faced away from him. "No," I said slowly, "can't make out a word." "We can't understand you," Sally said. The man raised his visor with an air of exasperation and said, "I'm sorry, all right." "Not as sorry as you're gonna be," Sally said, and jammed her thumb into his eye. He hollered, and his gauntlets went to his face. Just as Sally snatched away his gun, she wrapped the butt against his helmet to get his attention, then scampered back, keeping the muzzle aimed at him. The gunman looked at her with dawning comprehension, raising his arms, lacing his fingers behind his head, and blah, blah, blah. "Asshole," she said. His name was Larry Roman, which explained the word Roman stenciled onto each piece of his armor. Getting it off of him was trickier than shelling a lobster, and he cursed us blue the whole way. Sally kept the gun trained on him, impassive, as I peeled off the sweaty carapace and bound his wrists and ankles. Her house was badly injured, and I didn't think it would make it. Certainly, the walls fading to a brittle, unhealthy white boded ill. The D-Hopper itself was a curious and complex device, a forearm-sized lozenge seemingly cast of a single piece of metal, titanium, and covered with a welter of confusing imprinted controls. I set it down carefully, not wanting to find myself inadvertently whisked away to a parallel universe. Roman watched me from his good eye. The one that Sally had poked was swollen shut, with a mixture of resentment and concern. "Don't worry," I said. "I'm not going to play with it." "Why are you doing this?" he said. I cocked my head at Sally. "It's her show," I said. Sally kicked her smoldering sofa. "You killed my house," she said. "You assholes keep coming here and shooting up the place without a single thought to the people who live here." "What do you mean, keep coming here? This is the first time anyone's ever used the Trans-D device." Sally snorted. "Sure, in your dimension. You're a little behind schedule, pal. We've had Hoppers blasting through here for months now." "You're lying," he said. Sally looked coolly at him. I could have told him that was no way to win an argument with Sally. Not that I'd ever found any way of winning an argument with her, but blank refusal didn't work, for sure. Look, I'm a police officer. The man I'm chasing is a dangerous criminal. If I don't catch him, you're all in danger.
Really, she drawled. Greater danger than you assholes put us in when you shoot us?
He swallowed. Stripped of his armor, wearing nothing but high-tech underwear, and he was finally getting scared.
I'm just doing my duty, upholding the law. You two are going to end up in a lot of trouble.
I want to speak to someone in charge.
I cleared my throat. That would be me this year. I'm the mayor.
You're kidding.
It's an administrative position, I apologized. I'd read up on the civics of old, and I knew that marrying wasn't what it was once. Still, I'm a fine negotiator. That's what it takes nowadays.
So what are you going to do with me?
Oh, I'm sure we'll think of something, Sally said.
Sally's house was dead by sunrise. It heaved a terrible sigh, and the nipples started running with black gore. The stink was overpowering, so we led our prisoner shivering next door to my place. My place wasn't much better. The cold wind had been blowing through my bedroom window all night, leaving a rime of frost over the house's delicate, thin-barked internal walls. But I've got a southern exposure, and as the sun rose, buttery light pierced the remaining windows and warmed the interior, and I heard the house's sap sluicing up inside the walls. We got ourselves coffee and resumed the argument.
I tell you, Osborne's out there, and he's got the morals of a jackal. If I don't get to him, we're all in trouble.
Roman was still trying to convince us to give him back his gear and let him get after his perp.
What did he do anyway? I asked. Some sense of civic responsibility was nagging at me. What if the guy really was dangerous?
Does it matter? Sally asked. She was playing with Roman's gear, crushing my ornamental pebbles to powder with the power-assisted gauntlets.
They're all bastards. Technocrats. She spat out the word and powdered another pebble.
He's a monopolist, Roman said, as though that explained everything. We must have looked confused, because he continued. He's the senior strategist for a company that makes networked relevance filters. They've been planting malware online that breaks any standards to find competing products. If he isn't brought to justice, he'll own the whole goddamn media ecology. He must be stopped! His eyes flashed.
Sally and I traded looks, and then Sally burst out laughing.
He did what?
He engaged in unfair business practices!
"Well, I think we'll be able to survive, then," she said. She hefted the pistol again.
"So, Roman, you say that you folks just invented the D-hopper, huh?"
He looked puzzled. "The trans-D device," I said, remembering what he'd called it.
"Yes," he said. "It was developed by a researcher at the University of Waterloo and stolen by Osborne so he could flee justice. We had that one fabbed up just so we could chase him."
"Aha! The whole shtetl was built right over the bones of the University of Waterloo. My house must be right where the physics labs once stood, still stood in the technocratic dimensions. That explained my popularity with the transdimensional set."
"How do you work it?" Sally asked, casually.
I wasn't fooled, and neither was Roman's. Sally's version of casual put my most intense vibe to shame.
"I can't disclose that," Roman said, setting his face in an expression of grim dutifulness.
"Ah, come on," Sally said, fondling the D-hopper. "What's the harm?"
Roman stared silently at the floor.
"Trial and error it is, then," Sally said, and poised a finger over one of the many inset controls.
Roman groaned.
"Don't do that, please," he said. "I'm in enough trouble as it is."
Sally pretended she hadn't heard him.
"How hard can it be, after all? Barry, we've both studied technocracy. Let's figure this out together. Does this look like the on switch to you?"
"No, no," I said, catching on. "You just can't go pushing buttons at random. You could end up whisked away to another dimension."
Roman appeared relieved. "We'll have to take it apart and see how it works first. I've got some tools out in the shed."
Roman groaned again.
"And if those don't work," Sally continued, "I'm sure these gloves would peel it open right quick. After all, if we break this one, there's always the one the other guy, Osborne, has. He's got it too."
"I'll show you," Roman said. "I'll show you."